So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast. And good morning, everybody. Hope you're well. Sunday morning. And I think we'll just do a week in review. And I think we're probably going to do these on a Friday. But we've not done it yet. And Friday's gone. So it's Sunday. We thought we'd just run past it. And we've got four different areas that we're going to run through: property, business, finances, and market sentiment. And we'll just give you an idea of what's going on in the marketplace. And then the better informed you are, the better choices you can make, basically. That's kind of the idea behind it. And then I just wanted to put a little bit of spin on it from my own perspective, just give you my thoughts about what's going on. So let's just deal with property first of all. And we said this was coming for quite some time, quite frankly. People are like, why are you not Airbnb-ing your properties? And I'm like, it's because something's coming, right? And, you know, I felt that something's been coming with Airbnb properties for quite some time, but I felt this for like 3 or 4 years. There's obviously a shortfall of available rental properties in the marketplace, right? So where are the government going to get new properties from? We're not building any. So where are we going to get all these properties from? Well, Airbnb. Like, how many properties have been taken off the market for rental or for sale and that have gone on to Airbnb? And so now there's talk that the government are going to issue a new permit. If you want to run an Airbnb, you're going to have to apply to your local council, a little bit like planning permission, basically. Don't know what I've got my headphones on for. I don't need those. But a little bit like planning permission for your Airbnb. Now, obviously, this has already come in to some extent in London, where you've got, without planning permission, you've got like a 90-day span that you can rent your Airbnb out, which is a bit daft. Like, 90 days? Why 90 days? Why not 180? Why not a week? Like, I'm not really sure what that's supposed to achieve. It's either an Airbnb, in which case it's an Airbnb full-time, or it's not an Airbnb. But I think it's probably designed so that if people are travelling away and Airbnb their homes, they can still do that. Just I was going to say a bit weird and a bit disjointed, but everything this government does is disjointed. Now, you could also say that this is Sadiq Khan's view of how to implement things, not the government. But everything Sadiq Khan does is pretty disjointed as well. Look at the ULEZ stuff. I mean, just what a mess that is. But the question is, what are you going to do with your Airbnbs? Are you going to continue to rent them? Are you going to wait until this new permit comes in? If it comes in, we're going to have a general election. Is it late 2024? So by the time this current government gets an Airbnb permit thing in place, they'll probably be out of power. Maybe they won't. Maybe we'll get back in power. I'm not sure the British public can take much more bullshit, but there you go. So that's the Airbnb thing. That came out this week. It was quite interesting. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about, and you'll find this quite funny. Now, I'm not going to mention any names, okay? But I wrote down what I wanted to say about this. Two of the UK's biggest knobheads in property are having a boxing match. Now, I can't stand either one of these two people, but it's for charity, you know. And honestly, I would pay really good money to see them hit each other in the face as hard as possible. So I'm not going to mention who it is. You do your own research, you find out who it is there. But these guys are just, I just don't think they're very nice people, basically. But the two knobheads, and they're going to go do this charity boxing match. And I was looking at tickets, like 50 quid. I was like, yeah, I'll spend 50 quid. And the other thing I was thinking about doing was doing like every time someone gets a clean shot on the other person, like I put £5 towards the charity. I thought that would be really funny. Now, obviously, violence doesn't solve all problems, right? It solves some of them, but it doesn't solve all problems. But this is a charity boxing match. Yeah, I put a fiver or a tenner down for every good punch they land on each other. So I thought that was quite funny. Normally, I wouldn't do that. A friend of mine did do one of those white-collar boxing matches for charity, and he really enjoyed it. He enjoyed the working out. I don't think he enjoyed getting punched in the face, but he enjoyed the working out. But anyway, that's a thing that's on in July in London, I think, and they put up this fake press conference. Everything they do is fake anyway, let's face it. One of them's retiring again. And he's always retiring. You know, it's like, oh, come on. He's just taking it out of a Grant Cardone playbook or a Ty Lopez playbook. And it's, you know, after the 18th time, it's a little bit bullshit. Morning, Anna. Hope you're well. Thank you, Anna, on LinkedIn. We need to catch up soon. Yes, we do. I'm in Brighton, by the way, this next week. So I don't know where you are, but I'm in Brighton next week for a few days.
at the Brighton SEO conference. Anyway, let's move on. House prices. What's going on with house prices? So all I can give you here is an indication. I don't get the Rightmove data. I don't get information from estate agents. I can just give you an indication from the people that I've spoken to. And my own experience is we've got some sales going through right now. Some have fallen through, which we'll talk about. But house prices have only dropped a little bit, you know. That's kind of the impression. Now, when we talk about house prices, you know, we've got Land's End to John O'Groats and everything in between. And as we know, London, for example, is its own little island of a housing market, right? So, like, my stuff's in Leeds. And again, that is its own little market of what's going on. And if you're in Birmingham or Durham or Scotland or Wales, that's its own little market as well. They're all separate markets. So I can only really talk about what I'm experiencing and what I see and the conversations that I have. And the conversations that I'm having are that house prices, yeah, they've dropped a little bit. But, you know, that's a national average. Where we are up in Leeds, I don't really think they've dropped at all, in fact. If anything, it's business as normal. Now, I have to say that I think there's probably some less buyers in the marketplace than there was last year, right? The Morning Shujat, sorry if I pronounced your name wrong, on LinkedIn. Where was I? So I think the buyers are still there. There's just not as many, but they're still there. In fact, we had a house sale fall through. It was on at 300 grand. We put it up to 315 and we're still getting viewings. Let's talk about the house that fell through. Let's talk about a couple of those that fell through, actually. We've had three fallen through, right? So one of them, you won't believe, we agreed it in November. They were supposed to complete in January. The lady who was buying it sent her funds over to the solicitor, okay? That got intercepted and she was actually getting emails from someone else, and that money for the deposit on the property actually went to a scammer's bank details, right? So the first that they heard of it was because we put the property back on the market because we'd not heard anything, right? She thought it was going to complete that week. Only found out that the house was going back on the market. Phone up the estate agents being very, very upset. What's going on? Why is the property on the market? And they're like, well, you've not done anything. And she's like, no, we're completing this week. Turns out that she got scammed. So this money went over. All her bank accounts were on freeze. And so the estate agent came back and said, look, what do you want to do? Do you want to put it back on the market? Do you want to wait? They're very keen. So I said, look, let's trust the buyer. Never trust the buyer, by the way. Never trust them, right? Let's trust the buyer. Let's get them to see how far we can get again. Okay, well, let's do that. Trusted the buyer. They were then putting the property through. A month later, they get made redundant. They pull. So it's taken from November, what we're in now, we're in April. So what's that, 6 months? It's taken 6 months for a house not to sell. It's been empty, £1,200 a month mortgage. That's what, about £8,000, £7,500. Just in mortgage fees alone, because we kept the house empty instead of renting it. Just bonkers. So now the house is back on the market. We put it on for another £15,000 more than we'd sold it for last time, because I want to try and recoup some of that £7,500 if that's possible. So bonkers, absolutely bonkers. The other two that fell through are for EWS1 reasons. In EWS1 is the cladding, you know, from Grenfell, the whole cladding thing. Now, the EWS1, we've got an A-star rating, if that even exists. Morning, Chris, hope you're well. We've got an A-star rating on this EWS1, if you can get an A-star rating. Two separate solicitors pulled the purchase for their client because they were not happy with the EWS1. The EWS1 is what you need in order to sell a flat that's got cladding, you know, that's over a certain height. We had that. Both solicitors pulled them. We've got two more going through. I fully expect the solicitors to pull those as well. Like, it is a mess out there. Like, if you're selling apartments, it is a goddamn mess. And we've got another property, two properties that we thought about putting on the marketplace. And spoke to the estate agent, and they had a property at the exact same location going through. That one fell through. And the reason that one had fallen through, it's a four-story, grade two listed building, is because if there's a fire, it takes more than 10 minutes to get out of a building. And I'm like, so if there's a fire, you can't use lifts, right? Yeah. And it takes more than 10 minutes to get out of a building. Yeah. What? So the solicitors are pulling it for that? Yeah. The mortgage company are pulling it for that. I'm like, okay, but I've got these other ones with 12 stories. That surely takes more than 10 minutes to get out of those. They can go through. Yeah. But these, like, it's messed up. The whole housing market is messed up. And just one final thing on housing and property in general. Why does it take four... Oh, I'm on my high horse now. On a Sunday morning. Why does it take 4 to 5 months to complete a sale? Like, we're watching Million Dollar Listing, which we love, by the way, and we also love. It's such trashy TV. We love it. The other one is Selling Sunset. And they're coming out with 7-day closes, 10-day close, 30-day close. And we're coming out with, what, half a year close? Like, 6 months to sell a house? 180 days to sell a house? They're coming up with 7-day closes? Like, it's bonkers. The housing market in the UK is completely screwed, absolutely screwed. Let's talk about the Scottish market. Landlords are leaving the Scottish market, according to the Times. I wonder why that could be. Landlords are leaving. You don't think it could be because, is it the fact that you've frozen rents? Like, the day that they came out and froze rents, I issued Section 13 rent increases for almost every single one of my tenants in the Leeds properties that I have, simply because I thought that they were going to come out and freeze the ones in the UK and would not put prices up for some time, right? Bonkers. And I'm not the only person that did that. I've spoken to a lot of people that all came out and issued rent increases because of the froze rents in Scotland. That doesn't help anybody. And you know, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, fuck around and find out. I'm sure you've heard that. And the more they mess about with the housing market, the more they are messing it up. Sadiq Khan is really pushing for rent controls in London. I mean, could you imagine rent controls in London? It's hard enough right now finding a property. And I get rooms are £1,000. I get that. But you know why that is, Sadiq Khan? It's because now you've turned 20% taxpayers into 40% taxpayers. For people who are on, you know, riding bikes, delivering food, desperate to rent a room, who are paying £1,000, £400 of that £1,000 are more than likely going to HMRC in Section 24 tax, because the landlord has been pushed into the 40% tax-paying bracket because of Section 24. Like, this is such disjointed thinking. But what do we expect? Like, why would it not be disjointed? These people are fucking idiots. Why would we expect that this is like anything other than a complete and utter mess by people who have no idea, no clue about property, coming out making all these laws? Sadiq Khan hasn't got a bloody clue about property. What he needs to do is cut down on knife crime. That's what Sadiq Khan needs to do. And, you know, like, I was in Leeds last week, and honestly, I've never seen Leeds looking as filthy as it does right now. It's a disgusting place. What is going on in the UK? Now, obviously, I'm on the outside because I live in Spain, and I go into the UK, and so I'm not the frog in the pan where the heat is being turned up, so I'm there all the time, so I don't see it. I fly in and I see the mess, and I'm like, oh, this is messier than last time, because I've got something else to contrast it with. It's called a contrast frame. I can see it before and I can see it now, and I go, oh, it's much more messier than it is. There seems to be less homeless people in Leeds, for sure. But boy, it is filthy. And there's so many roadworks going on. It's shocking. Let's move off property. Let's talk about business. And by the way, all this stuff has happened in the last week. So UK economy on a tightrope between recession and growth as exports slip. Should we talk about exports? We're talking about business here. Why would exports slip? Has something happened recently, maybe, that's caused exports to slip? Has something happened? Brex? No, I can't think of anything. If I was a BBC, of course, I'm not allowed to use that word, Brexit. But this is a direct impact of Brexit. And, you know, I was watching a guy who's been interviewed on Sky News, and he sold stuff into Europe, and he was saying that they were in discussions with a company, and then as soon as the other company found out that they were UK based, they said, "Oh no, we can't do it. We don't want to import your stuff into our country because the processes and the forms are too complicated. When we can just get it from Spain and we just buy it and it gets shipped. Whereas when you're buying from the UK, now you've got to fill in all these forms, and then not only do you have to fill in all these forms, guess where it's going to get stuck? That long line of trucks." On the, is it M3 going to Calais? Like, all those products are going to get stuck there. So people are just like, nah, we're just not going to do it. And so that's a direct a direct impact. So the UK economy on a tightrope between recession and growth. Are we going to get growth compared to where we were 2 or 3 years ago? Are we the fastest growing G7 nation? Probably, if you fudge those numbers. But in reality, it's just only because we had the biggest drop because of Brexit. And when you compare those two figures, then you can fudge these figures to make up anything you want. Compared with the rest of the G7 from, say, 2016, we're an absolute mess. We're minus 4% or whatever it was, minus 0.4, whatever it is. Anyway, we're a mess. And so business is struggling. There's no question. And you know, if you've seen my podcast before, the way to solve a business that's struggling is to come out punching, you know, come out fighting for all that you're worth and absolutely ramp up your marketing. That's got to be number one. Be bold with your moves and be aggressive with your moves. And get your stuff out there. Go live 20 times a week, you know, more videos, more content. Let's just finish up on Brexit while I'm on. One of the things I thought was hilarious this week, two things. One was school kids coming on a school trip from Germany to Shakespeare. Why'd want to come to England to do some Shakespeare stuff? Anyway, I don't get that, not my thing. But they were disallowed because they were a flight risk. You know, these aren't people coming from war-torn countries. These are people coming, the school kids coming from Germany on a school lesson. And they were denied entry because they could have been a flight risk in case they flew to somewhere else. These are school kids on a school trip. That I found hilarious. The next thing I found really hilarious was there was a German band and they were coming over, filled in the mountains of forms. They had gigs booked. They'd sold out and they got stopped. There was like five people in a band and they couldn't come over because one of the guys was a gardener. This guy's a gardener in Germany. And they're like, oh, he's going to come over and work. So they got declined for that. Had to cancel the gigs, had to cancel all the staff, had to give all these refunds. It's just bonkers, absolutely bonkers. We're the only country that's given sanctions on ourselves and people are battling as though that's a good thing for some reason. Let's just talk about who is being affected here between the lower class, middle class and higher class. And by the way, we're really the only country that talks about the class system, other than America probably. You know, we talk about unemployment in Spain and under 26, the unemployment in Spain is huge, right? But it's not the same as the unemployment in the UK who are under 26. If you're unemployed in the UK, you're on housing benefit and you're living in your own little hovel, right? That's how it works. That's not how it works in Spain. You stay with your mum and dad until you're in your 30s. This is how it works in Spain. And so it's vastly different. So this middle, lower and higher class, I've never really been comfortable with that. We learned it in sociology in high school, but it kind of bothers me a little bit. But anyway, they're the things that we have to use, so we'll talk about them. What you'll find is in a recession, as we're bouncing between recession and growth, is that middle class people are just cutting back on luxury goods, right? And actually, some of our digital marketing clients who sell into that marketplace, they've had some pullback from their customers because they're now cutting back on some of their expenditure. And so, what tends to happen is that the middle class people have a buffer. Where, yeah, they can cut back and just not eat out as often and not have as many holidays. And it doesn't really affect them. We've obviously got high inflation on fuel, high inflation on food, high inflation on rent, and now obviously high inflation on interest rates, seeing as Liz and Kwasi Kwarteng messed it up and doubled all our standard variable rates, which is kind of them. But what you find is that the middle class don't get affected as much. They just pull back a little bit. And so then there is a knock-on effect, obviously. The poor, however, they've got nothing. Like, they've already pulled back. They don't eat out. They're not going on holiday. They're really struggling to pay bills. And right now they are struggling to pay bills. And I'm guessing if they have financial credit, they're hitting their credit cards. And so there will be something else down the line where bankruptcies will increase if it's not already. I mean, we're already in that situation, aren't we? But if we then move over to wealthy people, they're not cutting back on eating out and they're definitely not cutting back on holidays and that kind of thing, because what happens is that their wealth, they're already paid. They're easily covering their basic life costs, right? Housing, cars, holidays, food, they're easily covering those. And actually what they've got is they've got assets. And now we've got high inflation, the assets are going to take advantage of those high inflation as well. We knew that this was coming anyway, higher inflation. So Their wealth is actually just increasing massively. Their rent intake is increasing massively because of the inflation. And so they tend not to struggle. The usual low-end stores, so the people that cater to the lower end, like Tesco's, for example, Tesco's have been accused of excessive profiteering, which, you know, which is valid, I think. Obviously, we've got, was it 32 billion for Shell and 20 billion for BP? Like, profit? I mean, that's just obscene in terms of the amount of profit. But they're dealing with mass market people. You've got to heat your house, right? So you are limited with who you're going to go with. What you're going to do, you're going to go from OVO Energy to Octopus Energy to EDF to British Gas, and they're all the same. They're all going to make a huge amount of money and profiteering from the fact that we're in this situation right now. Absolutely shocking. So that's the business roundup. Let's talk about finances. By the way, if you've got any feedback, I'd like to hear what you guys think. So if you've got something to say, just drop it in the box, and hopefully I should be able to see it. Nurses have been offered 5% pay rise, which I think is absolutely appalling, by the way. Inflation's 10% just this year alone, and they've had a real-world pay freeze because they didn't get any pay increases, have they, for the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. Now, depending on whose numbers you actually believe, the real-world loss for those guys is between 16 or 26% of have been offered a 5% pay rise. I wouldn't accept a 5% pay rise. I think it's appalling. Doctors are going for 35%. I think 35% is too high, but it's called a negotiation, Jeremy Hunt. Are you the guys negotiating on that right now? And they're saying, as soon as you pull that demand, then we'll get into talks, but we won't talk to you until you've pulled it. Dickhead, that's not how you do a negotiation. Like, and this is what I mean. We have these imbeciles in charge, and they don't know how shit works. They just don't know how this stuff is supposed to go down. No. Get yourself behind the table and open a negotiation. Even if there's no negotiation, negotiating on what sort of coffee you're going to have while you're sat at the negotiation table is the beginning of a negotiation, right? This is how it works, building rapport. Not, well, rescind that and then we might talk. It's ridiculous. What planet are you on? Planet, take all the money and give it to your mates. That's the planet that we seem to be on with this government. God, I hate this government. And I'm a capitalist. Let's talk about the government for a second. I'm a fully fledged capitalist. I've got several businesses. I own property. I love capitalism. I think capitalism can really solve an awful lot of problems. What we have right now isn't capitalism. It's greed, right? So too much of any one thing. I believe in wealth redistribution to a certain extent. But I don't believe in the amount of greed that we've got right now. And the, you know, I remember stood outside clapping every night, 7 or 8 p.m., whatever it was, clapping for the people, for our key workers to continue to work. And I said to my wife, I said, just wait until the pay rises come through, because there will be pay rises because of inflation, right? Because they're printing money like no one's business. And the natural response to printing money is inflation, right? Quantitative easing. And everybody knows that. And if you don't know that, now you do, right? But everybody knows that. And so I said to my wife, when the pay rises come because of inflation, that will be very interesting. And here we are. They just want, they've just been given a 5% pay rise as an offer. And I'm happy for them to strike. I think there has to be a balance between wealth redistribution. And let's just talk about this a second, because this is not wealth redistribution that's been going on here to the masses. There's been wealth redistribution to the Tories' mates. The pub landlord who got a PPE contract because he was mates with Matt Hancock. Like everybody knows that that's under the table, brown paper envelope. Like, everybody knows that. Allegedly, shall we just add that word just for legal reasons? Everybody knows this. But what's going on right now, like, they've got themselves into this predicament, and everybody knew that this was coming. It's a lack of planning. This is literally what they are voted in to help with, and they just mess it up, and they don't even care, right? They absolutely don't care about you or me. They just care about lining their own pockets. Can we just talk about finances and gambling for a second? So now, I don't know if you recognize this, but Channel 4 Racing is probably the biggest reason why people gamble on horse racing over the last 50 years, right? It enables people. People watch football because they like watching football. I watch basketball because I like watching basketball. I like watching CrossFit because I want to be able to do what they do. People are not watching horse racing because they want to ride horses. The only reason people watch horse racing on Channel 4 is because they've got 50 quid on, horse number 2 or trap 4 for the dogs or whatever it happens to be. People watch boxing and UFC because they have an invested interest in the fighters. People aren't looking at Red Rum. Sorry, I don't know any other horses. People are not looking at Red Rum going, go on Red Rum, because they love the horse. They're doing it because they've got a 50 quid bet on it. So gambling is alive and well in the UK. And where was it? William Hill got hit with a £92 million fine for social responsibility, or lack of, and anti-money laundering failures last month. These people don't care about you or anyone else, just lining their own pockets at the expense of men being thrown out of the house because they gamble too much. And so we've got a direct correlation here. First of all, you've got gambling being... The lottery is gambling for poor people, right? Like, I've known that ever since it came out. I don't gamble, I invest. There is a different strategy. There is a return on investment usually. I almost put about 60 grand onto Bitcoin and I didn't because it was gambling. When Bitcoin just like 2 weeks ago was 20 grand, I'm like, if that's the new support. And I was like, let's put 60 grand on. If it had gone to 30 grand, that would have made me 30 grand. But I didn't do it because it's gambling, right? You don't gamble money that you want. You don't want to lose. I didn't want to lose 60 grand. You also don't gamble money that you haven't got a specific return on investment. Like if it's property and it's a 5% yield, I know I'm going to get 5% back on that, right? But I don't gamble. Gambling is not investing. There's a fine line between two of them sometimes, right? But it's alive and well. And there's also a direct correlation between men and gambling. And then, needless to say, there's a direct correlation between relationships breaking down because of the situations that men get themselves into. And one of the key factors to this are people like Channel 4 putting racing on. William Hill, 92 million quid in a fine. William Hill like, piffle. It's nothing to what they make for the last 10 years. Like, if you do a quick search, I'm not going to do it now because we're live, but if you do a quick search on their profits for the last 10 years, I don't know what it is. 100 million, 200 million, 300 million? Is it 888, the lady who does that? She makes so much money. UK's richest female entrepreneur, I think she was. Half a billion? Like, over the last 10 years, what? Couple of billion? I don't know, right? Somebody do the research on that. But it's significant. And this is basically men who get caught into this gambling because they are the breadwinners and then they lose the money and then they try and recover it. And so, like, we talk about finances, but gambling is talking about finances. And the whole thing is interconnected, and that's why I wanted just to cover that. Okay, market sentiment. Let's talk about market sentiment for a second. It's fucked. So apologies for that on a Sunday morning, but it's where we are. People have a very pessimistic view of where we are right now, very pessimistic view about the future, very pessimistic view about this government, very pessimistic view about the local elections, very pessimistic view about gas prices. Like, gas prices have dropped the lowest they've been for, 18 months or whatever it is, and yet we had a 20% increase on our monthly bills. Now, I understand why that is. It's because the day rate has decreased by such an amount. But when we bought that gas all that time ago, that's what it was. And so that's the figure that's used. I mean, the whole gas thing is such a massive scam anyway, isn't it? But people are really tightening up on their belts and there's less optimism in the marketplace. For people that are at the very top with assets, they're going to do very well. As long as you can cope with the interest rate rises and you can, batten down the hatches and hang tight, in 3 to 5 years, you'll do very well because this inflation is not going anywhere. Rental inflation, I can't see going anywhere. They might have rent controls, okay, which is going to ruin the market. Loads of landlords are going to leave. And when no one can get anywhere to rent, they're going to release the rent controls and then rents are going to shoot up 20, 30, 40%. Right. So if you can hang on, like, I haven't got a magic crystal ball. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's what I think is going to happen. Those at the top are going to do incredibly well. And your job should be to be those at the top. You should have assets. And an asset could be you know, sticking £100 a month into an ISA, into a, you know, FTSE 100, and getting dividends, like, and not touching that. Getting those assets for FTSE 100, that also will increase over the next 10, you know, less than that, 5 to 10 years, I expect it will double. Like, again, I've got no crystal ball. I'm not an expert. I'm just me who's done okay in my own stuff, and hopefully will do okay with the decisions that we're making here. Those at the very top will do very well. Your job should be to be at the very top. Those at the very bottom will do very badly. Now, if you're at the bottom right now, you need a side hustle. You need to get the support. You need to get the coaching. You need to get the knowledge that is out there. If you haven't got that, join our £47 a month coaching and knowledge trading, which you'll see the link down below. But the key is not to be poor, right? If you are poor, you're going to have to put the hours in. You're going to have to do the 65 hours. Now, I've done 65 hours. I've worked two jobs. I worked at William Hill when I was like, 23, 24 maybe. And I do 40 hours a week there. Oh, no, it's Symphony Kitchens. I work there 40 hours. And then I'd go work at William Hill on an evening and on weekends. And I would be working 60 to 65 hours a week. That's what I used to do. If you're struggling for money right now, this is what you need to do. And then also you need to get yourself skilled up. You need to, while I was working at William Hill, I was reading books. I was learning SEO. I was learning how to run businesses. I was reading, right? I was getting skilled up while I was doing all these hours. Sometimes you wouldn't get a phone call for ages working at William Hill. It was in a call center. And so you could just read. You weren't allowed to, but we did, right? But if you're at the very bottom, you know, the best and easiest way that you can help the poor is, first of all, not to be one. I don't know where I read that, but it's absolutely valid. If you are poor right now and if you're struggling, you need to go, you're going to have to go and exchange time for money until you can get yourself to a limit, excuse me, where you can get yourself to a situation where you've learned enough and you get paid compared to the value that you bring to a business, right? That is literally it. We all get paid. If you're complaining about minimum wage, but you're delivering fast food, well, where's the value? You can ride a bike. Everyone can ride a bike. There's no value there, right? You're going to have to find a way of getting more value and bringing more value to your marketplace. It could be starting your own business, dropping leaflets. Again, actually putting a leaflet through a letterbox, there's not really any value there because anyone can more or less do that job. But actually, the risk is higher. So the riskier the road, the greater the profit, right? As a Ferengi rule of acquisition from Star Trek. If you're watching Star Trek Picard, by the way, what an amazing series that is. But you have to bring more value to what you're doing. The middle class are treading water as they've got this buffer, right? But like, how many more increases in costs can people actually take? And I think it's getting quite close to the edge. And obviously, you know, even a little bit more, people are going to fall off the wagon because they're just going to run out of money and ability to pay. So the market sentiment this week is a bit of a mess. Let's just say it that way. And the only way to get out of that is to get refocused. Like tonight, for example, we've got our goal setting for the week ahead. We do it 7 p.m. It's something we just launched. You can sign up 7-day free trial. But 7 p.m. we're going to sit down. We're going to issue what do we want to achieve in the next 7 months, 7 days, and we have our goal setting sheets all lined up. And so we want to be able to get the next 7 days looking incredibly well. And how are we going to do that? What do we need to implement? What do we need to have accomplished? What do we need to put in place? What marketing do we need to do? What lives do we need to do? What podcasts need to go out there? What images do we need to create for our social media platforms? Who are we going to follow up with that we spoke to in the last 7 days? Who did we have strategy sessions with that haven't made a decision? Can we follow them up? And is there something else we can do to help them make a decision to come on board with us? All of that stuff is what you need to work out for the next 7 days. And then hopefully we'll do the weekly review and maybe we'll feel a little bit better about market sentiment. But then again, maybe we won't. Who on earth knows? Look, I hope that's useful. Have yourselves a wicked Sunday. And we'll speak to you soon. Take care. Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.